Your internet radio dial is in the perfect position, and Race to the Bottom is on the air. Time to sit back and enjoy some refreshing Winslow tea. Try it hot, lukewarm, or over ice. Have it with milk and sugar, or a lemon wedge, or au naturel. Now that's Winslow tea. A New York City tradition since 1872. Ask for it by name at the tea house or your local greengrocer, because that's how you know it's Winslow.
I'm John Reed. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this is Race to the Bottom. It's this you're listening to right now. And boy, do we have a special one today. An almost hour-long interview with, for my money, the best young jazz pianist doing it these days, Sam Harris, who plays with Ambrose Akin-Mercieret and Ben Van Gelder, and also has three excellent solo albums, including one that just came out, Solo. We'll talk about all of that. And this guy, Sam Harris, he's not Sam Harris, the like meditation guy who's like also like kind of vaguely anti-Islam. Not that guy. This Sam Harris is friends of some of my friends who went to Manhattan School of Music back in the day. And special shout out to my friend, the great drummer, Michael Davis, who put me in touch with Sam to have this conversation. I appreciate it. I'm trying to get friends of friends on here. You guys know anybody amazing or famous that I could talk to? Hit me up. Hit me up at racetothebee@gmail.com. No real monologue today, but whatever this monologue is sponsored by Winslow Tea, and I just drank it just then. You heard this slurp. Please hashtag your tea drinking experiences with hashtag how you know or hashtag slurp to enhance to steep into the conversation. So Sam and I talk about a lot, and I try to give context to what we're talking about by playing interludes from his records and Ben Van Gelder and Ambrose records. And then we get into talking about different synth pioneers and jazz artists that might be kind of off the beaten path. We talk about Charlemagne Palestine. His stuff is really interesting. I've been checking it out. We talk about Randall McClellan, Steve Halpern, Yassos, and Laraji. A few things about the interview before I let you hear it. One is that I think Sam was sitting in some kind of squeaky wooden rocking chair or something. So when you hear the kind of squeaky wood, just put your mind at ease. I tried to push Sam a little bit to put things into words, which he wasn't always the most excited to do, which I understand. A lot of this stuff is just better left unsaid. But I found it fascinating, like that interplay between verbalizing things and then trying to maintain some of the mystery. So listen to that. background, as usual, we're hearing Bremer and McCoy, who I really got to get on the show. Thank you, as always, to Bremer and McCoy for providing so much of the ambiance of Race to the Bottom. And I recommend them to Sam during the interview, as you'll hear. I'm recording this before the inauguration. Hopefully the world is still intact. I'm not going to talk about that this week. Maybe circle back to it next week. I hope everybody is safe and we can try to move on as a country. MoveOn.org, right? But without further ado, check out my interview with the great pianist Sam Harris. Well, I'm glad we could do this.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, no problem. I've been a big fan of your music for a few years now.
Thank you.
So, what's it like playing at the Village Vanguard?
Wow. It's. I mean, that's my favorite room to play in for sure.
Yeah.
I consider myself pretty fortunate to have gotten to play there a couple times. Honestly, I don't really know how to speak about it much more than just it's a very special place and intimidating.
Yeah. Did you grow up listening to records recorded there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember in high school, a big one for me was Sonny Rollins live at the Village Vanguard. Coltrane, obviously. There is a Keith Jarrett record recorded there. Yeah, lots. And when I visited New York, before I went to school there, that was the first place that I went with my aunt, I think. And that was the first place I went to see live music in New York.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know any of the people that were playing because I didn't really know anything about what was going on in New York. But we just went there and saw a show, and I don't know. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. So the record that I got into your playing with was Rift in Decorum. Which is the Ambrose Akin Mercere record, just for our listeners. Obsessed with that record. I've probably listened to that record as much as maybe any record in my history of listening to music.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
It's just, and I feel like it's a little unsung as far as Ambrose's stuff, maybe because it's not a studio record.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I think it's a basically a double album of original stuff. Not usually when people do like, you know, Village Vanguard, they're doing like covers and, you know, or new, you know, live versions of their compositions. But I don't know of another record that's like a live recording of all new material. Do you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are some, none are coming to me off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, that for me, that was, that was a very memorable week. Definitely incredibly intimidating and humbling in a lot of ways, because, you know, not only were we playing at the Village Vanguard, but to be recording there and to kind of, you know, feel like in some small part contributing to the legacy of live recordings at the Vanguard, it was pretty scary for me, but it was also a really good time.
So that was, the album is compiled from like 4 or 5 nights, or do you remember how many nights it was?
I want to say they recorded the whole thing, which would have been 6 nights, but it's possible maybe they only did 4 or 5.
Yeah, I was teaching middle school in the Bronx. I was a kind of a late career changer because I did music, and then I was worked in restaurants and stuff, and then finally I started teaching middle school English in the Bronx, and it was really hard. And and I would come home on the 4 train, and you know, it was just so chaotic and noisy,
right.
and wild, and I would just put on that record, and there's beautiful parts of that record, but there's also a lot of controlled chaos, and for some reason that and like a lot of out jazz was kind of the thing that I needed to hear to like get me through that year, or like 2 years. I basically listened to it nonstop for 2 years, and I just remember like with your playing, and I got to see you at Cornelia Street, RIP, one time.
Right.
And I guess to compliment what Ambrose does, there's like wild kind of flailing sometimes, and then that will like segue into like almost kind of ragtime thing, and then like a beautiful kind of controlled, just lyrical thing. And I just loved the range of your playing in that way.
Oh, thank you.
What did you learn from being in that group?
Oh man, I mean, I was a lot, I'll say.
Yeah.
And a lot of it I can't really put into words.
Yeah.
When I joined that group, I was, you know, not by much, but I was the youngest person in the group and had like very, very little experience touring, and very little experience just playing in a group where we would play like every night for long stretches of time. And so just having that experience alone is invaluable as a musician. You learn a lot about yourself and your peers, and you know how you relate to people musically and personally. I just learned I don't think I've had any other experiences that have been quite so educational for me. I think we've been playing together like 9 years now. So, and especially with that band, just the level of intense focus every night was really inspiring for me to watch and also try to be a part of as best I could.
Yeah.
I hadn't really had too many experiences, just playing in bands like that were so serious and had such a mature, cohesive sound.
I was just thinking about it, listening to like just the first track on Rift and Decorum, Maurice and Michael, like where, you know, the got the head and then Ambrose takes his solo and kind of pushes this intensity. I mean, intensity is the word with him so much of the time. I just love like how out it can get and then how beautiful it can get within like the turn of a corner.
Yeah.
then your solo just trying to like match. Yeah, it's hard to put into words, but it's like a lot of things going on at once, like maybe the conversation of the, you know, because from what I've read, the song is kind of the musical personification of this meeting he had of seeing an old friend on the train that was, there's this like almost conversation that you're having with yourself on the piano at the, like with multiple things happening at the same time.
Yeah. I can't say that that actually had to do with the story behind the piece, because I don't think I knew that until much later. But I will say, I think a lot of what you're talking about just comes from playing together a lot. And always, I think we all focus on listening above all, more than our own playing, really. You know, our playing, or for me at least, it feels like what I'm playing is secondary to just listening to what everyone else is doing, and then I just kind of find my way in there somehow, and in the end, usually it all adds up to something that sounds pretty good.
So it's not like intellectualized, it's more just going off tone and listening and...
Just being present in the moment and listening to everyone, and that's really about it, I think.
Yeah. So then I dug into your solo stuff, and there's that first record, Interludes, right? Van Gelder's on that as well. And so, and then I also went and listened to the records that you're on with him. What's it like playing in his group? Like, I just love the those compositions, and it's such a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's, well, it is a different thing, but I don't think the approach is any different for me, at least in terms of playing. It's still the same idea of listening to everyone else and trying to have a like bird's eye view of the music and then just finding where you fit in. And so that ends up sounding different in different groups, but ultimately the, like for me, the feeling of playing, even though the music might sound kind of different, the feeling is still the same. You know, just trying to play together with people in the moment. But yeah, you're bringing up a lot of good memories of playing with a lot of people that I miss a lot, because, you know, obviously haven't played with either of them in, you know, approaching a year now.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. And then, so with Interludes, were those compositions that you had been compiling for quite a while that you wanted to get recorded, or...
Man, I have to remember. I think most of those were, I hadn't really been compiling things for a very long time. Those were things that I had maybe written in a couple months or so leading up to the recording. But, you know, that was my first record as a leader. And I look at it now as, you know, as a learning experience, trying to figure out what I want to put out that has, you know, my name on it. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think each record is kind of a, you know, it's a document of where you are at that moment. Thank you. But that one, though I like it and I would encourage anyone that wants to listen to it to go out and check it out, but it's, looking back at it, it's definitely a little more disorganized and less focused, I think, than what I've tried to do subsequently. But, you know, all the musicians on there play beautifully, and I still appreciate listening to it.
Yeah, well, I've listened to it for, you know, hours on end, because it's just one of my, like, hanging records or writing. Nice. I write, and I just put it on to write, too. But it's like, it seems like from the titles, like, there's some sort of, there's, like, the recurring character of Manuel at rest. Manuel in space, like,
yeah. Do you know what a Manuel is?
I don't.
It's basically like a desert cat.
Okay.
Pallas's cat, or Manuel, is a wild cat that many have learned about only recently,
and they just look very cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all that was. There wasn't too much more thought behind it than that.
It seems, you know, all the songs, it's 14 interludes. It's interesting that you would say that it's disorganized, because it does seem kind of like iterative, and kind of these ideas and themes kind of repeat in different ways throughout the record. And each interlude has a name. And the only reason I bring that up is because after this record, you know, your next two records, Harmony and Solo, are just each, it continues this definite feeling of iteration. Because you have the album title, but then the tracks are just Roman numerals,
right?
Like 1 through 5, or then with Solo is now 1 through 7.
Yeah.
It seems like iteration, or like kind of exploring a vibe or theme, and almost doing like a triptych, or like a multiple paintings of the same thing, is kind of an inspiration for that. Or
yeah, I would say. Definitely. I don't know if I would describe it quite exactly like that, but I think you're definitely putting your finger on something that I am trying to do. But I will say, like, with interludes, kind of tied into what you were saying, like, one of the things that I did learn doing that was how much a record can be shaped after you've recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after the time in the studio. Because going into it, I was kind of the mindset, like, you know, we're making this record today in the studio. The most important thing is how we play and how we execute this music today.
Yeah.
But then once, you know, that was my first experience, like, kind of piecing together a record from a lot of different takes and figuring out a sequence and then titles. And all of that came after the actual music. So that really was illuminating for me. And as far as how much of the actual mood and feel of the record can come just from simply how you sequence it and how you group songs together and conceive of the overall flow. So yeah, that was pretty important for me. And then I think with later records, I've kind of tried to do a similar thing, but maybe not as self-consciously as I did with the first one.
Were you more drawn to, like, how you could create that kind of vibe as just playing solo, or?
Yeah. Well, the second record is with a trio, with Martin Nevin, the bassist, and Craig Weinrib. And with that one, I think one of many important lessons I learned with that one, that one of them that stands out was, like, we recorded a lot of music that day, but as I was figuring out, you know, how to kind of shape the album into its final form, I just kept taking tracks off and just subtracting tracks and realizing that even though some things might have sounded good or sounded worthwhile to present on their own, unless they were really serving the focused vision of the whole album, then they didn't need to be there. And so I got really comfortable just throwing away things that, even though I may have liked it, it in the end didn't need to be there. So then I think what I ended up with was, to me, a pretty satisfying, concise musical statement with, like, you know, hopefully no fluff, really. I feel like what we came up with, like, everything was sort of driving at the same idea and part of the same story.
Yeah, I mean, and as far as, like, stripping things back, like, even the last track on Harmony is basically just a cluster of, you know, five or six notes, just...
Yeah.
Kind of trilling, you know, mm-hmm. which I love. It reminds me, I guess, the closest thing that record or that song, and then just a lot of the stuff you've been doing is like mm-hmm. is the Bill Evans piece, which is just one of my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably my favorite Bill Evans works. I will say the track that you're talking about is almost a direct ripoff of I won't say direct ripoff, but it was very heavily influenced by a pianist, I guess, multi-instrumentalist composer named Charlemagne Palestine, who has he was kind of one of the first musicians that, when I listened to it, it kind of opened up the world of ambient or drone, whatever you want to call it, music. To me, where all of a sudden I heard it in a different way, and all his music is great and, like, mind expanding, and I would highly recommend it. But that definitely inspired a lot of that record. I kind of just wanted to take a lot of his ideas and play it kind of my own way and with a little more like blues feeling, I guess, is the only way I can think of describing it.
Yeah, I love the way that you can put the blues in there without it. It never verges on, I don't know what the word would be, but it's never phony to me. Like your approach to the blues is unique, and I can tell it's coming from your voice and not just running like scales or ideas that, you know, I appreciate that. And then there's the synth, which has like creeps in. I mean, it's in interludes and it's and there's moments like on the last track on Rift and Decorum and stuff on the last two Ambrose records where it's just like the synth will come in kind of out of nowhere and it just lifts everything like off the ground. And like, you're like, whoa.
Sam Harris on piano. So much for coming out and never been to see. Have a good night.
It's great and it's unexpected. And so then it was cool to hear on the new record solo that the whole record is kind of a dialogue between piano and synth. Who are your like synth heroes?
Interesting question, because the people that are coming to mind, I wouldn't necessarily describe them as synth heroes, but I think the people that maybe influenced the way that I thought about the possibilities of electronic music the most. Well, top of the list would have to be a musician who unfortunately is not as well known as I think his work deserves, but his name is Randall McClellan. Mm-hmm. And he has a couple, actually, I think a lot of his albums have been kind of re-released on Bandcamp lately. But he has a couple albums that are just centered around like a Moog synthesizer and two reel-to-reel tape recorders that he rigged up to create like kind of a delay layering effect.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how he was doing it, but it's very strange, ethereal, relaxing music that I just really love. And that definitely, you know, gave me some ideas about how to think about synthesizers. Another would be Steve Halpern, who I guess would be considered one of the founders of like New Age music. Yeah, so a lot of his music has a lot of like digital synthesizers that are centered around FM frequency modulation synthesis, which is a completely different architecture than subtractive synthesis, which is what most of the older analog synths were. So he kind of opened my eyes to, I don't know, just some different ways of layering sound and like ways that really bright digital sounds can be very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But one interesting thing for me getting into musicians like Steve Halpern and Randall McClellan, and another would be Iassos, who's another early new age ambient musician. Or Laraji is another one. A lot of those guys, when you read interviews with them, they're talking about like Alice Coltrane and Pharoah Sanders. Yeah. And so once I kind of made that connection, then new age music sounded completely different to me, because, you know, for as long as I've been serious about the piano, like Alice Coltrane has been really important to me.
Yeah.
Pharoah Sanders too. Those are probably my two favorite musicians. And once I could hear that connection to what a lot of the new age artists were doing, even though their music on the surface sounds very different, I think the intent is, you know, a variation on what like Alice Coltrane was doing.
What other music have you been excited about this year of quarantine?
For me, I tend to go in phases where I listen exclusively to like one artist or one kind of thing for a very long time and have complete tunnel vision and like don't care about anything else. I just want to like live and breathe this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's not like that, and I feel a little more scattered and kind of all over the place and just listen to whatever. So I'd have to say most of this year has been more in the latter category.
Mm-hmm.
And let me think if there's anything really interesting I've been listening to.
Or just comforting in this.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of Pharoah Sanders.
Yeah.
Whose music is always comforting and inspiring. And yeah, it's my favorite stuff to listen to.
Have you heard of this group, Bremer McCoy?
I have not.
You should check them out. They are they're Danish, mm-hmm. And it's a duo, and it's just keys and bass, and then they record onto tape, and they have like some dub. They'll do some kind of dub stuff with like tape loop and like analog pedals and stuff, but it's really simple and reflective, and they've been a big source of like peace to me, their stuff.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
So, yeah, and it seems, and your stuff too. I mean, we put on, you know, now solo, but we would put on harmony like on a Sunday night when I get like the Sunday scaries, like having to go back to work and stuff, and mm-hmm. like, you know, the sun setting, and like harmony's like the perfect record to kind of come back to your heart. Do you have, I guess, to end, do you have like any kind of dream projects that are kind of in the back of your mind if quarantine and resources weren't an issue?
Well, I definitely do have some dream projects, but they don't really exist as anything concrete that I can necessarily articulate. I always kind of have like a vague idea in the back of my head that is more of just a feeling rather than like a concept or like a group of musicians I want to get together. So I can say, yeah, I do, but I can't really describe them other than, you know, just a continuation of what I've been doing and what I've been thinking about.
Not like a combination of instruments or anything. It doesn't get that specific.
No, I mean, sometimes like an idea like that might pop in my head, but I think for me, I don't know, maybe this is just me being in, you know, having been in quarantine for nearly a year, like the idea of what musicians I want to play with has kind of taken a backseat to, you know, other conceptual ideas about the music.
Yeah, like the quality of it, not like the specifics.
Yeah, more just like what feeling do I want to create? So, yeah, but I think even before quarantine, I kind of work like that. Like, I have people that I love playing with, but the idea for an album is more just coming from a feeling or like a vague, cloudy idea that's floating around in my head. And then gradually I'll kind of piece together like how I can make that happen. And that'll include like the other musicians that are involved or whatever kind of things that I'll actually have to pin down at some point.
Yeah, but
that all kind of comes later.
Well, whatever the next thing is, I'll be eagerly awaiting it. And I hope to bring it back to where we started. I hope that after all this craziness is over, to one day see you back at the Vanguard.
Oh, man. I would. Yeah, I hope so. That would be great.
Great. Well, yeah, thanks. Thanks for indulging my questions and everything.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
That was great.
Cool.
All right. Well, hang in there. And you you had a kid this year?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. She's 2 months old. So
oh, man.
It's a lot of fun.
That's great. All right. Well, I really appreciate it. And hope to talk you down the road sometime.
All right, man. Good to talk to you.
All right. Peace.
Take care.
Yeah, how about that? How about that? Thank you, as always, to City Running Tours, cityrunningtours.com/NYC. You can go there and learn about how to run the city and learn the city. It's like 23 different neighborhoods in 4 of the 5 boroughs, excluding the hellscape that is Staten Island. And we thank City Running Tours, as always, for their support. If you're listening to this on your computer, you can download the app for your phone in either the Google Play Store or the iPhone Store, whatever that's called. It works great. If you want to drop us some dollars, you can go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. And while you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter. We only hit you up once a month and let you know all the great things that are happening at the station. Thank you so much once again to Sam Harris and to Michael Davis for setting this up. And once again, the more obscure artists that we talked about: Charlemagne Palestine, Randall McClellan, Steve Halpern, Yassos, and Laraji. I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in, and peace.